Hello, Hale, a voice barked suddenly into her ear. It didn't sound at all like the laid-back, thoughtful man she had met earlier. Is that you, Miss McClendon?
Yes.
Are you all right? Still barking. And now he reminded her of all the cops who'd ever sat in their rec room with their shoes off and their feet smelling up the place. He couldn't wait for information she would have given him on her own. No, he was upset. And now he had to dance around her feet, barking like a terrier. Men, she thought, and rolled her eyes.
Yes, she spoke slowly, like a playground monitor trying to calm a hysterical child who has taken a tumble from the jungle gym. Yes, I'm fine. Bill, Mr. Steiner is fine, too. We're both fine.
Is it your husband? He sounded outraged, only a step or two away from outright panic. A bull in an open field, pawing the ground and looking for the red rag which has provoked it. Was it Daniels?
Yes, but he's gone now.
She hesitated, then added, I don't know where, but I expect it's hot and the air conditioning's broken. We'll find him, Hale said. I promise you that, Miss McClendon, we'll find him.
Good luck, Lieutenant, she said softly, and turned her eyes to the open closet door. She touched her upper left arm where she could still feel the fading heat of the armlet. I have to hang up now. Norman shot a man from upstairs, and there may be something I can do for him. Are you coming over here?
You're damn right I am.
Then I'll see you when you get here. Goodbye.
She hung up before Hale could say anything else. Bill came in, and as he did, the hall lights came on behind him. He looked around, surprised. Must have been a breaker, which means he was in the cellar. But if he was going to flip one of them, I wonder why he didn't... Before he could finish, he began to cough again, and hard. He bent over, grimacing, holding his hands cupped against his bruised and swollen throat.
Here, she said, hurrying across to him. Drink some of this. It just came out of the icebox and it's cold.
He took the Pepsi, drank several swallows, then held the bottle and looked at it curiously. Tastes a little funny, he said.
That's because your throat's all swollen. Probably it's bled a little too and you're tasting that. Come on, down the hatch. I hate hearing you cough like that.
He drank the rest, put the bottle on the coffee table, and when he looked at her again, she saw a dumb blankness in his eyes that frightened her badly.
Bill? Bill, what is it? What's wrong?
That blank look held for a moment. Then he laughed and shook his head. You won't believe it. Stress of the day, I guess, but...
What? Won't believe what?
For a couple of seconds there, I couldn't remember who you were, he said. I couldn't remember your name, Rosie. But what's even crazier is that for a couple of seconds I couldn't remember mine, either. She laughed and stepped toward him. She could hear a trample of footfalls, EMTs probably, coming up the stairs, but she didn't care. She wrapped her arms around him and hugged him with all her might.
My name's Rosie, she said. I'm Rosie. Really Rosie.
Right, he said, kissing her temple.
Rosie, 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 Rosie.
She closed her eyes and pressed her face against his shoulder, and in the darkness behind her closed lids, she saw the unnatural mouth of the spider and the black eyes of the vixen, eyes too still to give away either madness or sanity. She saw these things and knew she would continue to see them for a long time. And in her head, two words rang, tolling like an iron bell, I repay. Lieutenant Hale lit a cigarette without bothering to ask permission, crossed his legs, and gazed at Rosie McClendon and Bill Steiner, two people suffering a classic case of love sickness. Every time they looked into each other's eyes, Hale could almost read tilt printed across their pupils. It was enough to make him wonder if they hadn't somehow gotten rid of the troublesome Norman themselves. Except he knew better. They weren't the type, not these two. He had dragged a kitchen chair into the living room area and now sat on it backward, with one arm laid over the back and his chin resting on his arm. Bill and Rosie were crammed onto the love seat that fancied itself a sofa.
A little over an hour had elapsed since Rosie's original 911 call. The wounded upstairs tenant, John Briscoe by name, had been taken to Eastside Receiving with what one of the EMTs had described as a flesh wound with pretensions. Now things had finally quieted down a little. Hale liked that. There was only one thing he would like more, and that was to know where the hell Norman Daniels had gotten himself off to. "One of the instruments is out of tune here," he said, "and it's screwing up the whole band." Rosie and Bill glanced at each other. Hale was sure of the bewilderment in Bill Steiner's eyes. About Rosie, he was a little less sure. There was something there, he was almost sure of it, something she wasn't telling. He paged slowly back through his notebook, taking his time, wanting them to fidget a little. Neither of them did. It surprised him that Rosie could be so still, if, that was, she was holding back. But he had either forgotten an important thing about her or not fully taken it in to begin with. She had never actually sat in on a police interrogation, but she had listened to thousands of replays and discussions as she silently served Norman and his friends drinks or dumped their ashtrays. She was hip to his technique. "All right," Hale said when he was sure neither of them was going to give him a string to pull. "Here's where we are in our thinking. Norman comes here. Norman somehow manages to kill officers Alvin Deemers and Lee Babcock. Babcock goes into the shotgun seat, Deemers into the trunk. Norman knocks out the light in the vestibule, then goes down into the basement and turns off a bunch of circuit breakers, pretty much at random, although they're well marked on the diagrams pasted inside the breaker boxes. Why? We don't know. He's nuts. Then he goes back to the black and white and pretends to be Officer Deemers. When you and Mr. Steiner show up, he hits you from behind. Chokes hell out of Mr. Steiner, chases you guys upstairs, shoots Mr. Briscoe when he tries to crash the party, then breaks in your door. All right so far?"
"Yes, I think so," Rosie said. "It was pretty confusing, but that must be about how it happened."
"But here's the part I don't get. You guys hid in the closet,
yes?
And in comes Norman, like Freddy Jason or whatever his name is in those horror pictures.
Well, not exactly, like...
And he charges around like a bull in the old china shop, stopping in the bathroom long enough to shoot a couple of holes in the shower curtain, and then he charges out again. Is that what you're telling me he did?"
"That's what happened," she said.
"Naturally, we didn't see him charging around because we were in the closet, but we heard it." "This crazy, sick excuse for a cop goes through hell to find you, gets pissed on, gets his nose pretty much demolished, murders two cops, and then... what? Kills a shower curtain and runs? That's what you're telling me?"
"Yes."
There was no sense in saying more, she saw. He didn't suspect her of anything illegal. He'd have been cutting her a lot more slack, at least to start with, if he did. But if she tried to amplify her simple agreement, he might go on with his terrier yapping all night, and it was already giving her a headache. Hale looked at Bill. "Is that how you remember it?" Bill shook his head.
"I don't remember it," he said. "The last thing I'm clear on is pulling up on my Harley in front of that police car. Lots of fog, and after that, it's all fog."
Hale tossed his hands up in disgust. Rose took Bill's hand, put it on her thigh, covered it with both of her own, and smiled sweetly up at him.
"That's okay," she said. "I'm sure it will all come back to you in time."
Bill promised her he would stay. He kept his word, and fell asleep almost as soon as his head touched the pillow borrowed from the little sofa. It didn't surprise Rosie. She lay down beside him on the narrow bed, watching the fog billow past the streetlight outside, and waited for her eyelids to grow heavy. When they didn't, she got up, went into the closet, turned on the light, and sat cross-legged in front of the picture. Silent moonlight informed it. The temple was a pallid sepulcher. The carrion birds circled overhead. "Will they dine on Norman's flesh tomorrow when the sun comes up?" she wondered. She didn't think so. Rose Madder had put Norman in a place where birds never went. She looked at the painting a moment or two longer, then reached out to it, feeling the frozen brushstrokes with her fingers. The touch reassured her.
She turned off the light and went back to bed. This time, sleep came quickly. She woke up, and woke Bill up, early on the first day of her life without Norman. She was shrieking, "I repay! I repay! Oh, God, her eyes! Her black eyes!" "Rosie," he said, shaking her shoulder. "Rosie?" She looked at him, blankly at first, her face wet with sweat and her nightgown drenched with it, the cotton clinging to the hollows and curves of her body. "Bill?" He nodded. "You bet it is. You're okay. We both are." She shuddered and clung to him. Comfort quickly turned to something else. She lay beneath him, right hand locked around her left wrist behind his neck, and as he entered her, she had never experienced such gentleness or felt such confidence with Norman. Her eyes went to her jeans lying close by on the floor. The ceramic bottle was still in the watch pocket, and she judged there were at least 3 drops of that bitterly attractive water left in it, maybe more. "I'll take it," she thought, just before her ability to think coherently ceased. "I'll take it, of course I will. I'll forget, and that'll be for the best. Who needs dreams like these?" But there was a deep part of her, much deeper than her old girlfriend Practical Sensible, that knew the answer to that. She needed dreams like those. That was who. She did. And although she'd keep the bottle and what was inside it, she wouldn't keep it for herself. Because she who forgets the past is condemned to repeat it. She looked up at Bill. He was looking down at her, his eyes wide and hazy with pleasure. His, she found, was hers. And she let herself go where he was taking her. And they stayed where they were for quite some time. Brave sailors voyaging in the little ship of her bed. Around mid-morning, Bill ventured out to get bagels in the Sunday paper. Rosie showered, dressed, then sat on the edge of the bed in her bare feet. She could smell their separate scents, and also the one they made together. She thought she had never smelled anything nicer. Best of all, easy. No spot of blood on the top sheet. No blood anywhere. Her jeans had migrated under the bed. She hooked them out with her toes, then retrieved the little bottle from the watch pocket. She took the jeans into the bathroom where she kept a plastic clothes basket behind the door. The bottle would go into the medicine cabinet, at least for the time being, where it could hide very easily behind her bottle of Motrin. She fished in the other pockets of the jeans before tossing them in the dirty clothes, a housewifely habit so old she was completely unaware she was doing it, until her fingers closed on something deep in the more frequently used left front pocket. She brought it out, held it up, then shivered as Rose Matter spoke inside her head. "A souvenir. Do with it as you will." It was Norman's Police Academy ring. She slipped it over her thumb, turning it this way and that, letting the light from the frosted glass of the bathroom window shine off the words service, loyalty, community. She shivered again, and for a moment or two she fully expected Norman to coalesce around this baleful talisman. Half a minute later, with Dorcas's bottle safely stowed in the medicine cabinet, she hurried back to the rumpled bed, this time not smelling the fragrance of man and woman that still lingered there. It was the night table she was thinking about and looking at. It had a drawer. She would put the ring in there for now. Later, she would think what to do with it. For now, all she wanted was to get it out of sight. It wouldn't be safe to leave it out, that was for sure. Lieutenant Hale was likely to drop in later, armed with a few new questions and a lot of old ones, and it wouldn't do for him to see Norman's Police Academy ring. It wouldn't do at all. She opened the drawer, reached forward to drop the ring in, and then her hand froze. There was something else in the drawer already. A scrap of blue cloth, carefully folded over to make a packet. Rose Matter stains were scattered across it. They looked to her like drops of half-dried blood. "Oh, my God," Rosie whispered. "The seeds." She took out the packet that was once part of a cheap cotton nightgown, sat on the bed, her knees suddenly felt too weak to hold her, and laid the packet on her lap. In her mind, she heard Dorcas telling her not to taste the fruit or even put the hand which touched the seeds into her mouth. A pomegranate tree, she had called it, but Rosie didn't think that was what it was. She unfolded the sides of the little packet and looked down at the seeds. Her heart was running like a racehorse in her chest.
Dasn't keep them, she thought. Dasn't, dasn't.
Leaving her late husband's ring beside the lamp, at least for the time being, Rosie got up and went into the bathroom again, the open cloth held on her palm. She didn't know how long Bill had been gone, she had lost track of time, but it had been quite a while. Please, she thought, let the bagel line at the deli be long. She put up the ring of the toilet seat, knelt down, and plucked the first seed off the cloth. It had occurred to her that this world might have robbed the seeds of their magic, but the tips of her fingers went numb immediately, and she knew that was not the case. It wasn't as if her fingers had been cold numbed. It was more as if the seeds had communicated some strange amnesia to her very flesh. Nevertheless, she held the seed for a moment, looking at it fixedly. One for the vixen, she said, and threw it into the bowl. At once the water bloomed a sinister rose madder red. It looked like the residue of a sliced wrist or a cut throat. The smell that drifted up to her wasn't blood, however. It was the bitter, slightly metallic aroma of the stream behind the temple of the bull. It was so strong it made her eyes water. She plucked the second seed off the cloth and held it in front of her eyes. One for Dorcas, she said, and threw it into the bowl. The color deepened. It was now not the color of blood, but of clots. And the smell was so strong that tears went rolling down her cheeks. Her eyes were as red as the eyes of a woman elbow deep in chopped onions. She plucked the last seed off the cloth and held it in front of her eyes. And one for me, she said. One for Rosie. But when she tried to throw this one into the bowl, her fingers wouldn't let go of it. She tried again with the same result. Instead, the voice of the madwoman filled her mind, and it spoke with a persuasive sanity. Remember the tree, remember the tree, little Rosie. Remember the tree, Rosie murmured. Remember the tree, yes, got that, but what tree? And what should I do? What in God's name should I do? I don't know, Practical Sensible answered, but whatever you do, you'd better do it fast. Bill could come back any minute, any second. She flushed the john, watching as the reddish-purple liquid was replaced by clear water. Then she went back to the bed, sat on it, and stared at the last seed lying on the stained cotton cloth. From the seed, she looked to Norman's ring. Then she looked back at the seed. Why can't I throw this damn thing away? She asked herself. Never mind the goddamn tree, just tell me why in God's name I can't throw this last seed from it away and be done with it. No answer came. What did was the excited pop and burble of an approaching motorcycle drifting in through the open window. She already recognized the sound of Bill's Harley. Quickly, asking no more questions of herself, Rosie put the ring and the soft blue swatch of cloth along with the seed. Then she refolded it, hurried across to the bureau, and took her purse off the top. It was scuffed and dowdy, this purse, but it meant a lot to her. It was the one she had brought out of Egypt with her that spring. She opened it and put the little blue packet inside, stuffing it all the way to the bottom, where it would lie even more securely hidden than the ceramic bottle in the medicine cabinet. With that done, she went over to the open window and began breathing in great lungfuls of fresh air. When Bill came in with a fat Sunday paper and an outrageous number of bagels stuffed into a paper bag, Rosie turned to him with a brilliant smile. What kept you? She asked and thought to herself. What a fox you are, little Rosie. What a... The smile on his face, the answer to hers, suddenly faltered. Rosie, are you all right? Her smile brightened again. Fine. I guess a goose just walked over my grave. Except it hadn't been a goose. May I give you one piece of advice before I send you back? Rose Madder had asked. And late that afternoon, after Lieutenant Hale had brought them the shocking news about Anna Stevenson, who hadn't been discovered until that morning due to her oft-expressed dislike of unauthorized visitors in her office, and then departed, Rosie took that advice. It was Sunday, but Hair 2000 at the Skyview Mall was open. The hairdresser to whom she was assigned understood what Rosie wanted, but protested briefly. "It looks so pretty this way," she said. "Yes, I guess it does," Rosie replied, "but I hate it anyway." So the beautician did her thing, and the surprised protest she expected from Bill when she saw him that evening did not come. "Your hair is shorter, but otherwise you look the way you did when you first came into the shop," he said. "I think I like that." She hugged him. "Good. Want Chinese for supper? Only if you promise to stay over again." "All promises should be so easy to keep," he said, smiling. Monday's headline: Rogue cop spotted in Wisconsin. Tuesday's headline: Police mum on killer cop Daniels. Wednesday's headline: Anna Stevenson cremated, 2,000 in silent memorial march. Thursday's headline: Daniels may be dead by own hand, insiders speculate. On Friday, Norman moved to page 2. By the following Friday, he was gone. Shortly after July 4th, Robbie Lefferts put Rosie to work reading a novel about as far from the works of Richard Racine as it was possible to get, 1,000 Acres by Jane Smiley. It was the story of an Iowa farm family, except that wasn't what it really was. Rosie had been costume designer in the high school drama society for 3 years, and although she had never trod a single step in front of the footlights, she still recognized Shakespeare's Mad King when she encountered him. Smiley had put Lear in Bibbles, but crazy is still crazy. She had also turned him into a creature that reminded Rosie fearfully of Norman. On the day she finished the book, "Your best job so far," Rhoda told her, "and one of the best readings I've ever heard." Rosie went back to her room and took the old frameless oil painting out of the closet where it had been ever since the night of Norman's, well, disappearance. It was the first time she had looked at it since that night. What she saw didn't surprise her that much. It was daylight in the picture again. The hillside was the same, overgrown and rather ragged, and the temple down below was the same, or about the same. Rosie had a sense that the temple's queerly skewed perspective had somehow changed, become normal, and the women were still gone. Rosie had an idea that Dorcas had taken the madwoman to see her baby one last time, and then Rose Matter would be going on alone to whatever place creatures like her went when the hour of their deaths had at last rolled around. She took the picture down the hall to the incinerator chute, holding it carefully by the sides as she had held it before, holding it as if she feared her hand would slide right through into that other world if she should be careless. In truth, she did fear something like that. At the incinerator shaft, she paused again, looking fixedly one last time at the picture which had called to her from its dusty pawn shop shelf, called with a tongueless, imperative voice that could have belonged to Rose Matter herself, and probably did, Rosie thought. She lifted one hand toward the door of the incinerator chute, then paused, her eye caught by something she'd missed before. 2 shapes in the tall grass a little way down the hill. She ran a finger lightly over the painted surface of those shapes, frowning, trying to think what they might be. After a few moments, it came to her. The little blob of clover pink was her sweater. The black blob beside it was the jacket Bill had loaned her for the motorcycle ride out Route 27 that day. She didn't care about the sweater, it was just a cheap Orlon thing. But she was sorry about the jacket. It wasn't new, but there had been good years left in it just the same. Besides, she liked to return the things people loaned her. She had even used Norman's bank card just that once. She looked at the painting, then sighed. No sense keeping it. She would be leaving the little room Anna had found her soon, and she had no intention of dragging any more of the past with her than necessary. She supposed she was struck with a part of it that was lodged in her head like bullet fragments, but... "Remember the tree, Rosie," a voice said, and this time it sounded like Anna's voice. Anna, who had helped her when she had needed help, when she had had no one else to turn to,
Anna, for whom she hadn't been able to mourn as she wanted to, although she had cried rivers for sweet Pam with her pretty blue eyes always trained for someone interesting. Yet now she felt a sting of sorrow that made her lips quiver and her nose prickle. "Anna, I'm sorry," she said.
"Never mind," that voice dry and slightly arrogant. "You didn't make me, you didn't make Norman, and you don't have to accept responsibility for either of us. You're Rosie McClendon, not Typhoid Mary, and you do well to remember that when storms of melodrama threaten to engulf you. But you have to remember..." "No, I don't," she said, and slammed the picture together on itself, like someone closing a book with authority. The old wood upon which the canvas had been stretched snapped. The canvas itself did not so much tear as explode into strips which hung like rags. The paint on these rags was dim and meaningless. "No, I don't. Not anything if I don't want to. And I don't." "Those who forget the past..."
"Fuck the past," Rosie cried.
"I repay," a voice answered. It whispered, it cajoled, it warned.
"I don't hear you," Rose said. She pulled the flap of the incinerator open, felt warmth, smelled soot.
"I don't hear you. I'm not listening. It's over."
She shoved the torn and folded picture through the door, mailing it like a letter intended for someone in hell, then stood on tiptoe to watch it fall toward the flames far below.